Welcome to episode 12 of the 2017 Front Stretch Podcast. This week, I am joined by my co-host, Tom Bowles, along with first-time guest of the season, Beth Lunkenheimer, who is here to help break down everything from All-Star Weekend on the NASCAR circuit, as well as schedule updates, Red Horse Racing topic, all kinds of good stuff this week. So before we dive in, I want to talk to you guys about DraftKings. Even though the NASCAR regular season is closing in on the halfway point as we come to the Coke 600 this week, you still have plenty of time to jump in on the action with DraftKings. On DraftKings, the objective is simple. Pick six drivers, watch how they perform on Sundays, and if you pick correctly, you could be eligible for massive cash prizes. All you have to do to jump in on the action is to sign up through the DraftKings link on either the Front Stretch homepage or the Front Stretch podcast article page, make a $5 deposit, and you'll be eligible for a free entry into one of this weekend's contests in Charlotte. Once again, DraftKings.com, where you choose, you play, and you win. All right, guys, how's everyone doing on this fine Tuesday night as we record? This will be obviously posted on Wednesday night, but how you guys doing?
Doing great. Welcome, Beth. Finally got you on the podcast.
It took me a bit to come around, but I'm here. Doing good tonight. How are y'all?
Oh, we're doing great, Beth. We're glad to finally convince you to join our shenanigans on this weekly podcast. So great to have you. But folks, I want to kind of jump in here. You know, some late breaking news this afternoon that I want to kind of dive into before we get into any discussion of the All Star race and all that good stuff. We got the 2018 schedule up and running. Up on the NASCAR website now, all of the changes that we kind of discussed on the podcast the last couple of weeks ended up coming to fruition. Just to recap, you've got Indianapolis is going to be moving to the regular season finale spot. The Charlotte Motor Speedway Road Course is going to be used in the chase. Vegas is moving into the chase with a second date to kick off the chase. Richmond will also be moving into the chase with a night race. The Richmond Spring Race will now become a night race again. And now, I'm not forgetting any, am I?
No, I think that's a good synopsis. And honestly, that equals the changes that NASCAR has made in what? The last, like, 5, 6, 7 years in results to the schedule. So I feel like we're on the right track.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of these changes. I'm interested to see kind of how you guys feel about this, that now it's all out there. The fan reactions seem to have been very positive today. So I have to think this is going to get chalked up as a win. For NASCAR, I would have liked to have seen which races Fox and NBC or which races are going to end up on Fox and NBC versus cable networks. I think that's an important factor in all of this. But I love, you know how I feel about Indy, and I think that's the perfect spot for that race, especially if they can get the racing to the point where I think it could be at that racetrack. So I'm excited. I think there's a lot to like, but Beth, I want you to chime in here. What do you think of some of these changes?
I think my biggest fear, though, is with Indy, just because the racing struggled so much in recent years. But if they can give us the kind of product we've been seeing so far this year, it's a great way to end the season. And I love the fact that we have Richmond, another short track, into the playoffs, which certainly helps a lot. And then the Charlotte Road Course, I was just examining exactly what was going to run, and it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see the Charlotte Road Course. I think that's going to really throw a curveball to everybody in a way that fans and drivers and teams have all been saying, well, wouldn't it be great to have another new track on the schedule? And by putting the road course in play in Charlotte, it's like you do have another new track on the schedule. So I think that with Indy, there is a, you know, fix the illness, not the symptom type of situation that NASCAR has to deal with all types of tracks. They're 1.5 to 2.5 miles in length, except for maybe the super speedways. I think that you need to work on fixing the aero push problem, and then the racing will pick up at Indianapolis no matter when you run it. But having it at the end of the season adds a little extra incentive. It definitely increases the level of importance for this race. And, you know, one thing that I know Matt is so keen on picking up on, you know, the ratings and stuff like that. You know, Indianapolis, for all the talk of boring that people have said the last couple of years, what was one of the few races to increase in ratings year to year from 2015 to 2016? It was Indianapolis. And Matt, I know what you're going to say. I know you're going to say we're primed for another increase in Indy again. And I think that in terms of people experiencing rather than following sports week to week. You know, if we're going with that theory, I think moving it to the end of the regular season is big.
Well, I think the Indy at the regular season spot works because, you know, when NASCAR first implemented, you know, a chase slash playoff format, the expectation was that the last regular season race was going to be a big affair. And depending on the season in the early chase days, it was. But now with 16 drivers making it in, you know, usually you have fairly, I wouldn't say irrelevant drivers, but the drivers that are fighting for that last chase spot aren't, you know, usually fan favorites or anything of that nature. So the drama has not really been there in that race at Richmond towards the end of the season because, you know, once you strip away the fact that it's the regular season finale, it's just another race. And I think that by moving Indy to that spot, Indy doesn't really need anything else. You know what I mean? Indy is Indy. It's a crown jewel of the sport. It's the second most important race on this schedule. So I think that's a good spot for that race to close it out because, okay, now it doesn't really matter if the battle for that last playoff spot is not great because it's still the Brickyard. That race is big in its own right. Drivers want to win that because it's the Brickyard. Drivers don't look at the Fall Richmond race and say, wow, that's really a race that I need to win. That really is going to make my career. That's just not the case. So, you know, I think it just adds to a race that already has a lot of prestige associated with it. And if they can get the racing product to where I truly believe it could be one of the best and most exciting races on the schedule, it should be. If they can get it to that point, that's going to be a huge win. The only track thing that I have any reservations on is with the Charlotte Road Course, and it's only because, you know, I've driven the track in iRacing, and I know that they've, I at the risk of sounding like a nerd here, of course, but... I just did, and I'm just going to accept that. But, you know, I've raced on the track virtually, which gives you pretty much a one-to-one view of what the track race is like, and I know that they're making some changes to the infield road course because that road course has really never been used for a major auto race, nothing like IMSA or IndyCar, nothing. So this will be the first time that a major auto racing series has ever driven on that course. And the course under the format that I've seen it is not a particularly inspiring road course. I think you just have to kind of virtually see it from a cockpit view. There's not a lot of passing opportunities. It's your classic infield course, which doesn't really have a lot going on with it. Now, granted, that might translate well to NASCAR. I don't think it would translate well at all to an open wheel series for sure. There's no doubt about that. With NASCAR,
but I don't think they're not trying to sell it for an open wheel series, my friend. Sorry to interrupt. And that's the thing. Like they're trying to sell it for NASCAR. And I think if you look at the grand scheme of things, they keep talking about fan feedback, and people say that NASCAR doesn't listen to the fans. But Beth, you and I talk about all the time, people that complain and people that are always focused on the negative. It's hard to take a lot of negatives away from this because if you look at the chase now, right, you've got one road course, two short tracks, four intermediates, two tracks that are a mile in length, and a super speedway. I don't know what collection of tracks could be more representative of what the series currently races on. You could maybe get rid of another intermediate and replace it with a short track, but I don't think that would be fair because I think if you proportion it out, the 10 racetracks now that make up the chase next year are really the percentage of tracks that we race on during the regular season, the different types of tracks.
Well, all I was going to say was simply that, I think fans should not overblow the expectations for that road course. I think it's either going to be incredible. I think stock car racing is either going to play out incredibly well on that track or is not going to work out very well. So I'm just saying I think people should kind of approach that weekend with some bated breath. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. I think a lot of people are going to be really curious to see how that unfolds. But that's going to be an interesting one. So any final thoughts on the schedule before we move on here?
Actually, yeah, I was looking at the truck series schedule, and you look at it right off the bat and notice that some of those longer breaks have actually been reduced. This time, here we are at the end of May this year, and we've got just five races after running Charlotte last week. Well, this time next year, it's 7 races because you have the addition of Vegas early. And then you have Dover that got moved to before Kansas and Charlotte. So I think that's going to help with the overall momentum of the series, which is a good thing. Sadly, it's still only 23 races. I'd love to see it back to the 25 it used to be. But for now, it's a step in the right direction, at least.
Beth, you know, you're...
Go ahead.
You are the truck racing expert on our site, so to speak. Our beat writer, however you want to phrase it. Looking at the truck schedule, what do you think that series needs to be added? Obviously, you know, and this is we don't get to touch on the truck series a lot. We're going to touch on the truck series a little bit this week. But what do you think that series needs from a track perspective? What tracks do they need to be going to? What are a realistic, if you were to go to 2 more racetracks to round it back to 25, where would you bring that series?
Richmond and Darlington.
Interesting. That was a quick answer.
It's because it's something I've thought about for a few years. I mean, Richmond usually puts on a great race in a cup car, and the trucks, I mean, compare the truck race to the All-Star race. What was a better race than last weekend? Hands down, it was the truck race.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you had a 3-wide battle for the lead right off the bat. And so right away, you're looking at that, and there was passing all throughout the field. So if Richmond can put on a good cup race, then we can darn well put on a good truck race there, too. And Darlington, because Darlington.
You know, I think with the truck series, and I think that really needs to be an experimental series. I think I would really love to see the truck series go to someplace like Nashville Fairgrounds. I'd love to see them go to a few more road courses. If you had to pick any tracks outside of the NASCAR spectrum that you would go to, where would they be, whether it's a short track, a road course, hell, anywhere overseas, where would you want to bring that series?
Well, I think I would leave out anywhere overseas just because the costs are already so high and so many teams are struggling in the series. But I would love to see more short tracks. The Fairgrounds is a great idea. It's one of those things where, kind of going back to the roots of the series was built on short tracks and road courses. And now you're running on a lot more of these intermediate tracks and you see a little less competition, although Kansas and Charlotte were actually a pleasant surprise this season. So I think we're headed the right direction with those as well.
So I want to keep going on the truck series topic because there was a big piece of news this week. One of the stalwart teams in the truck series, Red Horse Racing, announced that they're going to be shuttering their doors this week. Beth and Tom, certainly you could jump in here too. What was your immediate reaction to this news? Do you have any insight on why you think it happened? Obviously, the team had struggled with sponsorship for many years, but you know, the question that I had was, you know, why now? I mean, the team is run Timothy Peters unsponsored for what seems like, you know, half a decade. So I was curious to get your take on that and what you how you feel about the state of the truck series right now.
Yeah, well, I'll go and let Beth handle all the serious stuff. And first of all, how far the mighty Jeff Hammond has fallen, right? You know, once one of the more integral people on the Fox broadcast, now pushed to the side completely. You know, remember, Jeff Hammond was a small part of this Red Horse Racing operation for a while. And, you know, you look at one of the stalwart teams in the truck series. I mean, Beth, this was a team we talk about from time to time. All right, you have an Xfinity series or a truck series team that at the end of a season, you know, is running for a championship and contending up there. I remember Elton Sawyer years ago running for a team that was running top five in the standings and then couldn't find a sponsor for the next year and shut down. That's one thing. But when you're sixth in the standings and you have somebody like Peters that's a championship contender year in, year out, and all of a sudden you just shut down like that in the middle of the year, right after Charlotte, right when the truck series schedule is going to get going with little or any notice, it makes me wonder if something deeper is at play. And this is a guy in Tom DeLoach that was a Penske trained guy. You know, it's not like he's some random dude that just came off the street with money and said, I want to start a NASCAR team. You know, he's known what the financial circumstances are. You know, he's known what it takes to run at many times unsponsored over the course of a season. And so I wonder if there's more information here on this deal that has yet to come out that we're going to find out that they had been in trouble for a little bit longer than they've let on.
Well, I think what you have to consider is it's obviously not a lack of passion from Tom DeLoach or any of the people at Red Horse, but you have to consider the fact that you look back at the last 3 seasons, basically since the beginning of 2014, Timothy Peters has had exactly 7 primary sponsors listed in all of that time period. There comes a point where you just cannot continue to pull money out of a pocket that's empty and emptier and emptier and emptier every week. And I don't even know what the purse money is now, but when NASCAR was still letting those numbers out, it was dismal at the best. I mean, you've got single car teams who are going to fan sponsorships just to get their trucks fixed, just to get themselves back on the track. And I think part of the issue was going with that second truck for Brett Moffitt, because you're talking about now double the costs with a second truck in there. Maybe Peters could have run the rest of the season without Brett Moffitt in the second truck. Who knows?
Yeah, it's a really unfortunate scenario, and I think it just underscores the fact that the cost structure in this sport really is just completely out of whack. And what's sad about big league auto racing and NASCAR is that even despite how completely out of whack the sponsorships run for in the sport, you know, a big league truck sponsorship is going to run you about $3 to $5 million for a season. A big league Xfinity sponsorship is going to be about $7 or $8 million, whereas a Cup sponsorship is going to be $15 to $20 million. Those numbers are really outrageous, really. They shouldn't be that high. And the numbers are as high as they are simply because that's what it costs to run one of these operations. And what's sad is that, you know, even in spite of that fact, we still get sponsors that are willing to pay that money. The interest is there. You know, you talk to anybody that's on that side of the sport, they'll tell you the interest is there. It's that the cost is too high. If NASCAR were to somehow able to bring cost reductions there where they can get the cost of doing business in the truck series down 30% to 40%, you'd have the series be flush with sponsorship. Everything would change. You have less paid drivers, the whole nine yards. But it becomes a slippery slope in a sport where it's performance oriented and there's no salary cap and there's no way to cap spending. I don't really know how you fix this unless you bring in a salary cap. I mean, what do you guys think? What would you do to fix that problem?
I think it's one of the questions that has been around the sport now for 15, 20 years, gone unanswered, and now it's really, really starting to come back to bite people, because you have this continuing stretch on the Cup level between rich and poor. And what happens is the Cup sponsorships cost more and more money. So some companies are eaten up at the top levels of Cup that might otherwise go and sponsor lower level Cup teams. Then those lower level Cup teams need to raid sponsors that maybe are the Xfinity and the Truck Series. And it just has a trickle down effect. The more that Rick Hendrick spends for his Cup operation, it just doesn't affect the people trying to compete against Rick Hendrick in the Cup Series. It trickles all the way down the NASCAR economic ladder. And when you look at trucks, Beth, you know, and I'd be interested in your take on this. When the Truck Series used to be just a short track series with a handful of road courses and, oh, maybe every once in a while we're going to pop up and run a Michigan. That was one thing. But now you're sending them all over the country. And you're sending them all over the country for, you know, a schedule that can be grueling at times. Like, the truck schedule is unbalanced. You know, you have all those weeks off at the beginning of the season, and then at the end of the season, you have all those races in a row where if you have a smaller team or you try and run a smaller operation and then you wreck a truck or two trucks in a row, you're going to really struggle to go through those five or six truck races at the end of the season. So I absolutely think that they need to bring costs down, and I think they could be effective in doing that if they took some of the wind tunnel and engineering power away. And I think how you do that is what we were talking earlier about the Truck Series, more short tracks, and keeping them a little bit closer to the home base of Charlotte, not making them travel as much, cuts down on travel costs and cuts down on team costs and allows people to have a more limited home base. And yeah, maybe that means the trucks don't get to go all the way to the West everyone as much as they do now, but maybe it makes it more of an event. The one time they show up on the West Coast, it's, say, Fontana or Phoenix or somewhere, and most of the other races are home, very, very close to home in Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Beth, what do you think?
You know, and the hard part with trying to move things back toward Charlotte is you don't get that exposure. You don't reach that fan base. Yeah, okay, so the stands aren't nearly as full for a truck race as they are a Cup race, and that's fine. You're looking at a shorter race, you're looking at lesser known names, but for people who follow the Truck Series on a regular basis, they know the kind of talent that's in there, and by taking that away from, say, half the U.S. and moving out of those markets, I think you, in the long run, hurt them in exposure, even if the cost is there to make those road trips.
Any final thoughts on this topic before we move on?
Well, I think Beth makes a good point, but I think that in the long run, NASCAR just needs to come up with a way, and franchising in general doesn't necessarily do it, as we saw with the franchise system this year. You know, your franchise is only worth as much as people interested in buying the coin, right? And when you have lower tier teams that are not performing well to begin with, and you know that they're not worth the same as the multi-car giants, and you know that there's no real competition for a spot in that 40-car field. There's 41 cars entered for the Coke 600, right? So 41 cars for 40 spots. That means only one guy is going to go home, and that's one of the few times this year we've had a crowd bigger than 40 cars trying to enter a cup race. So you don't have the demand for ownership and the demand to make these fields as they used to have. So even these franchises in general, you know, Red Horse Racing shuts down, they're going to auction off their pieces and parts for pennies on the dollar. And you're not really getting any value out of it. They have to find a way to increase the value and at the same time cut costs in a way that's beneficial for all the owners and gives them more money to play with. And that's a very, very hard equation to navigate, and one that doesn't have an easy answer, to be honest.
Luckily, that is not what they pay us the big bucks to find out. So, moving on. I want to talk
such
about
a downer podcast for Matt.
I know
you are Mr. NASCAR optimist, and there are so many downer stories. It's like impossible for you to be smiley this week. It's like,
well,
everything's on fire around me, but you know, we're going to try and put the smile on, and you know, to say the sun's outside and we're near summer, you know.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think the track schedule for next season is looking great. You know, I'm excited about the VHT that they're going to put on the track this weekend. Also, NASCAR is not going to have any NBA competition on Sunday night, so it's going to give them pretty much an open night with no competition, which is going to be nice. So there's still always a lot to look forward to. Never knock my optimism. So my optimism is always somewhere around the corner. But speaking of Charlotte, I want to talk about All-Star Weekend. I don't even know if we need to discuss the race itself very much because there wasn't much to discuss in terms of drama. Kyle Busch obviously won the race on an exciting move to end the race on the restart, going three wide down into one and won the race. But not a lot of passing. It was very clear that whether it was the weather, whether it was the package, something didn't add up because there was not much passing in that race. And the option tires really didn't work out the way I think a lot of people thought they did, even though they attracted critical acclaim after the race from the drivers and teams. What were some initial takeaways of the All-Star Weekend, and what do you expect going into the Coke 600 now that we've kind of gotten a little preview of what the racing is going to possibly look like heading into Sunday?
Beth, I'll defer to you on this one. I'll let you go first.
All I can say is I hope that what we get out of the 600 is even 10 times better than what we got out of the All-Star race, because there was hardly any passing. Yeah, you had the thrilling move where Kyle Busch, you know, ultimately won the race, but there was nothing. And I think maybe part of that, you know, it was much shorter stints, so you've got less time. But what I think is really exciting is the four stages. You know, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with making that change just a couple weeks before the race. I think that should have been something that should have been announced at the very beginning of the season, so it was something everybody could plan for. But the idea that you're having 400-lap segments is huge, because now you're kind of adding that extra spot where they're going to have to race harder, in theory, for stage points, which should hopefully increase some of the excitement there.
Yeah, the only problem is they added that fourth stage in the middle of the regular season, as we talked about last week. I think if they had added that fourth stage in February, and I do think it's a great idea for the future, you know, giving certain races more weight, you know, NASCAR's crown jewels like they used to do with the Winston Million Bonus, I think that idea, under the right circumstances, would have some legs. But I think the Coke 600 was already under a cloud with this four-stage thing, and then you add in the All-Star race, and I think NASCAR is going to have a real tough sell for the 600. And one thing that I said before the All-Star race, and the one disappointment I had with the 2018 schedule, I think if the All-Star race this year sucked, they needed to move it out of Charlotte, because they threw everything but the kitchen sink at it. And they threw it, and it didn't work, and it should be at Bristol. And I'm going to be on that train now from here on out. Because if they had so much confidence in Charlotte as an oval, then why doesn't Charlotte have two oval races in 2018? yeah, the road course is going to be a great addition to the chase, but they chose Charlotte in particular and chose that road course. And it's because it's NASCAR's home base, and they're losing the confidence of the home base for people to go attend the Oval, because the Oval races there have sucked. Not going to sugarcoat it. You look at Eric Jones, passing the grass 2017, ooh, my splitter is killed and I spin out. That's a far cry from what drove fans to their feet in 1987. They need to fix it. They need to address the illness, not the symptom. I hope that the All-Star Race weekend made them take a serious look at what's going on with the aerodynamics with these cars and the package for 2018, because this 2017 package has been very hit or miss on intermediates, with the exception of Kansas, I would argue almost completely miss on intermediates. And we saw it on full display in what should have been a fantastic weekend, Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last All-Star race. You had a bunch of new rookies battling for spots in the field, and you had the format that matched the same format which produced such a dramatic finish in 1992 with option tires, with the option for different types of pit strategy and pit stops, with an elimination style format. I don't know what more you could do, Matt. I'm sorry. Can't put lipstick on this pig. Gotta go, Bristol. I'm done.
Well, you know, as far as – I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with having it in Charlotte, but you got to get the package right. And the package is clearly – and I've been on that train all year long that the package is not, in my opinion, where I think it could best be served. And it's been very hit or miss, and I don't know the reason behind why. And I respect the fact that I know that they're working hard on it, and I know that there's an awareness that the package could be better. And I know that they're working on it behind the scenes, and I know that there's a lot of work being done, and it's difficult. But that doesn't change the fact that, you know, something has to change on these racetracks. But the one thing I will say, looking ahead to the Coke 600, was, and this is something that, Tom, you and I discussed this on the phone earlier today off the record, was that just because, you know, you get a bad all-star race, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get an unexciting Coke 600. You saw the opposite kind of happen last year, right? You know, last year I thought the all-star race was really exciting. The package was on point. It really was a very exciting race. Then you go to the Coke 600 the next week, and it was a dud. You had one guy lead almost every lap. So, you know, I look at the package, or, you know, the Coke 600 this year, and I think of the 2011 Charlotte Speed Weeks, I guess you could call it. And that season, I thought you had one of the most exciting Coke 600s we've had probably in the last 10 years. Very, very exciting race. That was, for those that forget, that was the race where Dale Earnhardt Jr. ran out of gas coming to the line. There was just all kinds of craziness happened in that race. A lot of passing up front, comers and goers. It was just a great intermediate track race. One of my favorite races, to be honest with you, over the past 10 years. Great race. Fun fact, I was actually at the Indy 500 earlier that day. My first Indy 500 that day. That's a story for another day. But anyway, that was a great race that year. But guess what? The All-Star race that year was terrible. Carl Edwards, very similarly to what we saw in this year's race, just dominated that race. Everybody was talking about how Charlotte is just a maligned racetrack, all of this. And, you know, we ended up having a great Coke 600 the next week. So I wouldn't write this race off. Another interesting thing that they're trying this weekend is they're going to be putting the VHT resin that they used at Bristol to help the racing at that racetrack. I don't necessarily think that that's by any means a cure-all, but I think it will absolutely widen the groove out quite a bit. And, you know, I think that could at least give us some multi-groove style racing. And I think multi-groove, you know, night racing a lot of fun. So let's just see what happens. You know, the package is what it is at this point. So I think people kind of are going to be forced to have to adjust their expectations down a little bit with this package until we get something that works a little bit better. It's constantly a moving target with that. So, you know, I'm holding my hopes high for a good Coke 600 because they are mixing it up, and I think the stages are going to be interesting, and I think it could still be a fun night, guys. I'm not going to... You know, you were looking for my optimism earlier in this podcast, Mr. Bowles, and I think it's coming out with this one. I'm going to go ahead and predict that. I think we're going to see a good Coke 600 this weekend. I just get that feeling. I had this same feeling in 2011 when the All-Star race was a dud, and everybody was talking about how the Coke 600 was going to be terrible. And, you know, lo and behold, it ended up being a great race. So past performance is not indicative of future returns or lack thereof. So that would be my rebuttal to that. Any final thoughts on Charlotte before we move to our final topic?
Well, I certainly hope you're right, Matt, because 600 miles of what we saw this week, past weekend, is not going to work for me. So I hope you're right. I really do. Because Charlotte needs it to be a good race. NASCAR needs it to be a good race.
Martin Truex Jr. struggled in the All-Star race. But remember, last year he led 392 of 400 laps at Charlotte. Let's just hope that what we saw from Kyle Larson before the final, you know, 10 laps of the All-Star race, if I could spit it out, isn't what we see on Sunday in the 600, because then we could have another dominant car up out front for a long period of time, because the 42 looked like he had everyone beat hands down.
Well, for our final topic here, Charlotte is not the only major auto race on Sunday. Memorial Day weekend, and then the Sunday before Memorial Day, obviously, you've got the Indianapolis 500, and you've also got the Monaco Grand Prix that day. So an amazing day of racing. You know, we talk a lot about the business impact of sports on this podcast. And, you know, there's a really cool story this weekend in Indianapolis for the 500. You got Fernando Alonso, Formula One champion, probably one of the best race car drivers on the planet at any given time. I think at any given time, he's probably the second, anywhere between the first and third best race car driver on the planet, is going to be making a cameo appearance in the Indy 500 this weekend. He's going to be starting fifth. Tons of excitement in the open wheel community about that. First, I want to get your guys' impressions on Alonso in the 500, and then I want to kind of connect this back to NASCAR and who you guys would like to see cross over to the Daytona 500, and if you think it would have the same impact as what we're seeing with Alonso in Indy.
That's interesting. Well, I would start by saying that Indy's had two unexpected stories that have really brought attention to the 500. And while they're not the stories that you ultimately want, they have better endings than they could have had. Number one, Sebastian Bourdais and the awful wreck that he had during Indianapolis qualifying. Thank God he's okay. You know, he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Fractured hip, fractured pelvis, already had surgery, but you know, he was tweeted that he's on the mend, had his crew visit him, and you know, he's going to be okay. And you know, that wreck made national news all over the place, as most of those horrific crashes do, and brought some attention to the 500. And then the most random story, guys, you know, Scott Dixon and not Tony Kanaan. I can't believe I'm blanking on the other guy. Yeah, Dario. That's right, because he's not driving the 500, but Scott and Dario get robbed at a Taco Bell. And that, to me, brought all this other unexpected attention from people that wouldn't even really be focused on the Indy 500, and they would go, oh my God, I can't believe these guys that are famous athletes got robbed at a Taco Bell. And it was just one of those interesting human interest stories that brought attention to the race. And you know, besides Alonso, I think it has ignited a lot of buzz. And I think that we're going to see very strong crowds and very strong rating for the 500 this Sunday, following up on the 100th edition of the race last year. Now, as for Alonso, I think that he's really impressed everybody so far by how well he's adapted to oval racing. I mean, to start in the middle of the second row and to come up to speed as quickly as he has as a rookie is really impressive. I think 200 laps of that, as we've seen countless times over the years from NASCAR stars crossing over or people from other series trying Indy for the first time, is very much a 50-50 proposition. For about 50% of those superstars that come over, like, I don't know, a Nigel Mansell or something like that from the 90s, there really isn't that much of a transition at all. And what you see in qualifying, you see held up during race trim. For the other 50%, they find that the 200 laps is a little bit overwhelming. They make a mistake, or they're just not used to that type of rhythm, and they find themselves getting knocked out of the race through either circumstances they create or something not of their making that they're not expecting. And I think it'll be fascinating to see which side Alonso lands on. I could see both sides. I could see him contending for the win on Sunday, and I could see him getting a little over-aggressive and knocked out during a crash, especially during his qualifying run, guys. I was really, really pleasantly surprised, you know, by how aggressive that he was going through each turn. I mean, he was inches from the wall and really pushing the issue more than you saw a lot of other guys during qualifying. But that type of aggressive style, as we've seen with so many rookies in Indy, could end up harming them in the race, because all it takes is one mistake and then suddenly you're out.
Beth?
I think what you have to think about with Alonso here is you have to look back kind of at, well, granted, he's adapted quickly, which is speaks highly of his talent. But look back at when Kurt Busch was running the double there. He adapted pretty quickly, and he finished sixth, so he was able to maintain that for most of the race. Granted, there were, you know, the ebbs and flows of racing, as there always are, but you have to believe if he's adapted, as long as Alonso can stay out of trouble, it's going to be a good story. But I think what's more telling about it is the fact that he was willing to skip Monaco to go to Indy. What does that say about F1 at this point?
Well, I think yeah. In terms of what it says about F1, I think it says one or two things. First of all, I think it says more about McLaren Honda than it does anything else. That that team is so far off the pace that they were basically willing to say, yeah, you know, we're not going to be competitive anyway. You know, we may as well have our ace driver go win a race somewhere else. I don't know if that necessarily says a lot about F1. I think there's a lot that could be said about F1 right now. I think it speaks to the lack of parity in that series. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a black mark on F1 or anything of that nature, but I do think it is, in a strange way, a black mark on McLaren Honda, even though they are still the reason he is going to be in Indy. That's an interesting topic. Do you guys think this is a black mark on F1 in any way?
I agree with Beth. I think it's a little bit of a black mark because you have one of your top drivers deciding, I'm not going to complete a full schedule and take a week off and go run Indy. And in essence, if he was competing for the championship in any way, shape, or form, there's no way that he's going to skip that race. And it showcases how the championship is limited to such a small amount of teams. Because I feel like teams in Formula One are just as important as drivers. And I definitely think that it is an eye-opener for Formula One in that how many times did we see, like, Michael Andretti and his stint in F1? IndyCar used to be a training ground for Formula One, right? Where only the best of the best would have a shot to make it in Formula One. And it was like IndyCar was the minors of open wheel, and you graduated to this big technological super wonder that did races all over the world. Now, you have Formula One guys going, you know what? I think the Indy 500 is big enough that I want to take a shot at it. And then you have Lewis Hamilton starting to jabber about how he'd love to try NASCAR someday, or maybe hop in an IndyCar. And it seems like the tide may be turning, even though the ratings outside Indy barely register for IndyCar. It's fascinating to me that it seems like there is a corner suddenly turned all these years after unification, where IndyCar may have a shot at still carving a niche for itself. Well, you know, and against Formula One, I really think that this is a feather in their cap. I really do.
Yeah, I certainly think it's good for IndyCar. There's no doubt about that. I just don't know. A lot of people try to compare F1 and IndyCar, and they're just two completely different animals. I mean, F1, I don't even think F1 really views itself as having any competition from IndyCar. I know if you talk to anybody, you know, in NASCAR, you know, won't talk about competing with either one of them. You know, NASCAR sees themselves as being competitive against, you know, mid-range, you know, sports like the NHL, NBA, MLB. You know, Formula One probably looks at all of this. I don't even know if they would care about IndyCar. So, I think it speaks more to the parity, the lack thereof in the sport, where you have one of the best drivers saying, I'd rather just go race somewhere else this week. It is an interesting topic. But speaking about the NASCAR angle, and we'll kind of tie up with this, who would you guys want to see come race, we'll say, in the Daytona 500, and do you think it would have the same impact?
I would absolutely like to see, I know it's Formula One, Lewis Hamilton's my number one pick, and I think that would have a dramatic impact more than anybody else. On the IndyCar side, I don't think a guy like Ryan Hunter-Reay would really move the needle, but you look at somebody like Bourdais, who was so successful with an underfunded IndyCar ride this year. He's got a little bit of a fan following overseas. I absolutely think a driver of Villeneuve-like influence that gets people from outside the lower 48 to take a look at the sport, I think would have a great impact. You know, and guys that I look at over on the IndyCar side, you know, I think a guy like Bourdais does it. Helio Castroneves, you know, he has the Dancing with the Stars thing going on. You know, I think that he would have a little bit of a limited impact in terms of what I'm talking about for his fan base. You know, and in terms of somebody within the lower 48, born and raised, how about the Andretti family? And how about Marco Andretti, even though he hasn't had quite the success? He or Graham Rahal trying to do the Indy 500 would definitely generate a lot of interest. And remember, the Andrettis were working with Dodge before Dodge decided to exit the sport and potentially starting a program with Dodge backing in NASCAR, and still seem to have a side interest of getting in the sport. Although, as IndyCar has righted itself, Beth, I feel like that has faded into the background. But who are your picks?
I'm kind of looking at like a Tony Kanaan or a Dario Franchitti. I think a lot of that has to do with their social media presence too, and the fact that they're so out there. I think that would bring in some of the IndyCar crowd that has looked at, you know, NASCAR maybe with their noses in the air, or said, no, we don't need no NASCAR, we've got IndyCar. I think they would generate a lot of interest because of their overall personas that you see in interviews, in, you know, on social media. I think that would drum up a lot of interest.
Yeah, I would love to see Lewis Hamilton come over. I think Lewis Hamilton is one of the few crossover stars left in motorsports, outside of a Dale Earnhardt Jr., Danica Patrick. That's really it. And then Lewis. I mean, Lewis is a massive star. You know, tabloids follow him. Him coming to NASCAR could seriously be a... If he came to the NASCAR full-time, I think that would be an incredible shot to the arm of the sport. I think that would be amazing. And he's hinted at that in the past. You know, he's hinted at being fed up with Formula One and, you know, some of the rules and regulations on that side, wanting some new challenges. And I think Lewis is good enough. He has the style that I think would fit NASCAR, that aggressive style that often hurt him in Formula One racing, I think, would benefit him in NASCAR. I would love to see Lewis. I think he'd be great at restrictor plate racing. I'd love to see him in the 500. He would 100% be my pick. And then as far as IndyCar, I think Marco Andretti coming over to the NASCAR side would really be the only name that would make any real sense and really any impact, simply because having an Andretti race in the 500, or the Daytona 500, would be a huge deal. So those would be my picks. And I genuinely think that Lewis could come to NASCAR at some point. I strongly believe that could happen. I mean, Lewis actually came, I believe, it was 2015, he came to Jeff Gordon's final race in Homestead, kind of toured the garage. He tweets about NASCAR sometimes. I think there's a respect and some interest there. So that'll be interesting to watch. I'm kind of curious to see how that unfolds. All right, guys, another podcast in the books. Any last second final thoughts here? I'm going to give each one of you 10 seconds, even though I know usually one of you, I'm looking at you, Tom, usually goes over that 10 seconds, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Tom, why don't you start?
All right. Well, we should like sponsor this or something like that. I feel like this is our homage to sports reporters, you know, our little ending soliloquies. No, absolutely not Jay Mariotti. So I want to twist your question in closing, and I guess I have two things on the way out the door. Number one, a look at the Indy 500. Indy has a lot of things going for it right now, but one thing I don't understand that Indy and NASCAR have failed to cooperate on the last couple of years is the double. Beth talked about Kurt Busch and the excitement surrounding double dipping, both the Indy 500 and the Coke 600. We have no NASCAR drivers attempting that this year. And surprise, surprise, over at the Indy 500 on qualifying weekend, something that should have built a lot of momentum, especially after the 100th edition of the race, we had 33 cars going for 33 spots, and they just barely made it to the field of 33. Like Buddy Lazier put a jalopy on the racetrack and qualified it so that they could just round out the field. And I think that it's absolutely silly, especially in an age where sports is challenged by so many other entertainment options, and racing especially has taken a hard hit, that Indy and NASCAR would not work together in some form or fashion to really make a big deal out of this double. A number of drivers have done it. Every time they do it, it adds increased interest to both races, and it also causes an uptick in car count, which for the Indy 500 would be really, really great for them to have. So as we look ahead to 2018, my hope is that both sides will come to their senses, and we find a way to make the double happen again, you know, because it's going to help the Indy 500 just as much as it's going to help NASCAR. And now that Indy has the upper hand in the ratings for the big weekend, maybe they'll relax a little bit and try and work together with NASCAR and realize that both race series get helped by this type of situation and build their niche in different ways. And I'm going to end with this before sending it to Beth. Kyle Busch sweeping the weekend, winning the All-Star race. We've seen two situations happen from a guy that was winless heading into the All-Star race, and then he wins it. You know, you've seen a situation like Jamie McMurray in 2014 where nothing really happens after that and his season continues to stall out. But for Busch, I'm looking more like a scenario where I think this could get his season going. And after he got over the hump, it's the type of situation where watch out, don't be surprised if suddenly Kyle's got three or four trophies by the beginning of July. He's just that type of guy.
Well, and I think to your point to Kyle Busch, you have just in general a little bit more life in JGR, especially after Kansas. Granted, they didn't all finish all that great, but you've got a little bit of a Toyota momentum swing right now. And so maybe not just Kyle Busch, but I mean, somebody like Martin Truex, who did lead so many laps last year, could he do it again? I mean, it could happen that way, or we could see a whole lot more.
Yeah, I hope. Listen, I'm hoping we don't see someone lead any more laps than Martin Truex did last year, because I believe he led 389, I think it was. Anyway.
392. Don't skimp off the three laps, man. It's going to call us.
I was close on that. And I know Martin takes that very seriously, too. My final thoughts here, listen, guys, I know everyone likes to complain about motorsports. I think that's motorsports fans' most favorite pastime. But please just enjoy this day for what it is on Sunday. It's the most beautiful day in racing. You've got three crown jewel races for each individual sport. You just don't get anything like this. It's one of probably two or three days out of the entire year outside of the Daytona 500 day and the Homestead weekend where motorsports gets top billing in America. So no NBA contest that day, no NHL competition that day. NASCAR and IndyCar have the whole day to themselves. Please do us all a favor. Support your sport. Put those dials on the TV. If you're near one of these racetracks, get to the track. Support your racetrack. Support your local short tracks. Let's turn this thing around. ABC, 12:30 on Sunday for the IndyCar race. Fox at 6:30 for the NASCAR race. Tune in. We'll be here next week to break it all down. We'll catch you next time, guys.